What's up, guys and gals? It's your host, Joshua Evans, creator of Comics Inspiring Good on the Go, Jedi Knight, Super Spy, Honorary Wakandan. I'm just here to have fun, have a good time. We're going to have a great time today, actually, more than good. Great. It's been a little while. Would you actually believe? So I had done an episode. You know, we do two episodes a month. I did this whole episode for May 4th. It was Star Wars and like a whole, I had a whole thing, recorded the whole thing, and then tech glitch. Lost all of it. And then I got an attitude after that. So I was like, forget this, man. And I'll just pick it up in 2 weeks. So my apologies. I should honor the listeners better. But I got an attitude because it was it was Star Wars. You know, I poured my heart out. It was very emotional. Anyways, today's episode, before we get into it, let's do the art thought of the day. Today's art thought of the day is be mindful to attack the mistakes and not yourself for making them. So many times as artists, as creators, when we make something and it's wrong or there's like a tiny tweak, we'll attack ourselves like, oh, I'm so stupid, I'm so dumb, I'm so flawed, it's because I don't have this education, I don't have a degree, I'm not formal enough, I don't have recognition, like we find so many arrows to fire at ourselves and it's unnecessary. It literally doesn't help at all. So when you come across something like that, attack the mistake like, oh, I went left too much, so next time I'm not going to go left that far. And even like take it a click lower, more than deciding not to go left that far, I'm going to hone my intuition so that I know when it's time to stop. That's really what it is. Artistry is all about intuition and being able to drop into that flow state, because once you're in that flow state, you can do anything. When you're on, that's why a lot of people I like anyways, performing on stage, because when you know your stuff and you're on stage, you're in that flow state. And you can literally do anything. I've been in a flow state so heavy before that I've been performing a piece and I forgot the words. I made up the words on the stage until I found myself back in the piece and then picked up the piece. And nobody knew except for me. But that's the power of honing your intuition, of being in that flow state. So make sure that you are attacking the mistakes and not yourself. Woo! Okay, the title of this podcast, as you no doubt already know, is The Art Versus the Artist. There's always conversation about this. Like, can you separate the art from the artist? Does it matter if the art that's created honors the fanhood and legacy, or is it enough just for it to be made shiny for new audiences with no real staying power? cough, side eye at Star Wars. Does the artist have to be as virtuous as the art he or she presents? Or I would even add here, it's not always like in the case of you know, welding or something, or if you're making like R&B music, where it's not necessarily a virtuous product per se. Like you're not making like a feel-good song or an uplifting, empowering movie. Like you're just making art that's really, really good. Or you're making a painting, like one of my best friend actually, she did a painting of Donald Glover, like a screen capture from the This Is America video. And it's like amazing and beautiful. But there's nothing like particularly virtuous about it per se in the normal sense of the word. It's just really great art. It's very thought-provoking and insightful and all this other stuff. But it's not necessarily like virtuous. So I would even add to this point, does the artist have to be as virtuous as the art they produce? Or I would add to that, does the artist have to be as virtuous as we perceive them to be? Right? Or can we accept amazing art from terrible people? And so all this, really, all these questions that people have when you're dealing with the public and controversy or lack of controversy in the case of artists who create things, but people don't have dirt on them, or there's been no exposure. What is the purpose of art? I feel like that's what a lot of people are wrestling with, especially in this age of endless reboots, this age of endless exposure from people working in the industry. Like there's so much controversy as stuff you love is being proved to have been created by people who do things that you despise, where stuff that you loved as far as like artistic creations or on-screen depictions are being, I don't want to say ruined, but they're not living up to the thing that made them special, but it's all in the name of, you know, canning it, and repackaging it with modern sensibilities with no real sense of the legacy and the power behind these things. What is the purpose of art? Is it to provide an experience through self-expression, like on behalf of the artist? Or is the point of art to point to the artist as a model to live by? The three points we're going to be hitting today as far as the art versus the artist are the conflict, the expression, and the resolve. The conflict is all of these things. It's all of these questions. What happens when this person who I admire because of their art becomes someone I no longer admire? What do I do with the art? What happens when this property that I love, when this you know, these shows that I grew up on that contributed to my childhood, that informed my psychology and my emotionality? What happens when these things are stripped of those elements and become a caricature of what they were and are then, you know, brought to the spotlight, brought to the main line, and it's eaten up because it's inherently good, but you know, it doesn't have that thing? This is the conflict. This is what people wrestle with. This is the battle. This is the war, the art versus the artist. So let's get into expression of art, right? So starting off, obviously very big, Donald Glover, aka Childish Gambino, which is hilarious that a lot of people didn't even know that they're the same person. He drops this video, This Is America. And so in it, it's like, it's got some island vibe tones as far as like the opening to the song and like the chorus, and then it goes into straight trap music as far as like, just, well, it's not real trap music, it's like modern day mumble rap trap music. And he goes into like just the sound and his delivery and everything, but the video itself, for those of you who are not part of the 60 million plus who have seen it, the video itself is this interesting juxtaposition of ideals. And so he goes through the video, and as it's man, it's so many layers. So one aspect of the video is his character goes through killing different people. He kills black people, and then he wraps the gun up in a velvet cloth and passes it on. And that happens throughout. So he shoots a guy in a chair. He walks into a church, shoots up the choir. And so stuff like that happens, which we know this has actually happened in history. There's another element to where he's like, you know, he's rapping and he's dancing, but in the background all around him, all these terrible things are like, people are running for their lives. People are getting shot. There's police abuse happening. But, you know, this is how industry works. This is how hip hop works. Like, music is always going forward, not really, especially today, not really paying attention to what's happening all around. And the show just goes on. And then even like the final scene, and this is an extremely abbreviated breakdown because the video is so deep. At the end, I felt like there was even a reference to Get Out because he's just running, desperate for his life. There's that one aspect, the black guy running for his life, because no matter how much success you get, no matter how much acclaim you receive, you are first and foremost always a black person in America. And then there was the Get Out element to that, where white people want to be you. They want everything about you without actually having you. And so he's running, they're running. It's the whole thing is beautiful juxtaposition. So This Is America drops. It takes basically the world by storm, definitely all of America. And people are talking about it. There's all these think pieces and op-eds. And it's amazing because it's a fantastic video. The art, right? And he's being praised as like this brilliant artist, this revolutionary mind. But what happens if tomorrow we find out that he slaps his girl around? What happens if some ardent reporter, some very vigilant internet troll or whatever, does some deep research and finds out that, you know, he used to be a hardcore thief, or he was in a situation that looked like it could have been a rapey situation? Like, then what happens? Do we lose the art because of the artist? Do we only love the art because we perceive the artist to be virtuous? That's the real question here, because then that makes it about us. Do we only love the art because we perceive the artist to be virtuous? So if artists are horrible people and we never knew about it, would you still love the art? I'll leave you to think about that one. Kanye West. What? Need I say more? No. Kanye West, so he starts off the beginning of his career with this amazing trajectory. He's this, you know, this highly ambitious kid. Like, he's rapping and he's doing all this, what, 5 beats a day for 3 summers. Like, he's killing it. He gets in this crazy accident, shatters his jaw. His jaw's got, like, wires all in it. He goes into the studio and still raps. This dude is a legend. He uses his money. He tries to get his mom the surgery, and it doesn't go well. She dies. After that, his whole world changes. The whole style of his music changes. How he approaches and engages life and mental, emotional trauma changes. And so now, here we are with modern day Kanye. He wears the Make America Great Again hat. He doesn't really know how to do conversations in interviews. And so he has huge ideas. I want to actually stop right here for a second. I'm going to butcher the phrase, but you know, it's like, it says, it's small people talk about people, important people talk about situations, and great people talk about ideas. I butchered the first part of that, but the ending part of that is great people discuss ideas, and that's all fine and dandy until you're the one with the idea, because you'll find out there's not a lot of people who discuss ideas. And matter of fact, while you're discussing your ideas as the idea person, you know what everyone else is doing? They're discussing you. So Kanye is in this weird position where he has these lofty ideas. He has these very ambitious concepts that he's wrestling with to bring together. He doesn't always articulate it well, as most people with great ideas don't. He's in the spotlight. So he's doing his thing. And so he's in this weird spot where he has this crazy fan base. He has people who love his music. I wouldn't necessarily say that they love him, but they love his music, or they love him on the condition that he lives up to what they need him to be in their minds. But they love him, they love his music, and now he's departing from, openly, from the Kanye that they know. And so now it's like, well, do we rock with Kanye or do we not? Are we supporting Kanye's music or are we not? And it's a real conflict, because even if you listen to his old stuff or you buy the old albums, you know he still gets paid. And so are you honoring yourself by staying true to what you love, to what informed you, to what gave you this incredible experience? Or are you dishonoring yourself by funneling Kanye where he's at in his journey, and this person who you probably do not agree with, this person who you would, no matter how lofty his ideas are, there's no reason to wear a Make America Great Again hat. Are you fueling that? Are you a Donald Trump supporter because you're supporting Kanye's music, even though it's music from the old Kanye? It's a war. This next one hits close to home for me, and it is the area of Star Wars. And so I promise I will keep this brief, but this is George Lucas's Star Wars versus Disney Star Wars. Two main points. The original trilogy and the prequel trilogy and the Clone Wars series. So yes, the prequel trilogy caught a lot of flack because some of the performances were a little bit wooden. I can admit that. And it didn't have as sharp an execution as it could have. And he used a little bit too much CGI. Granted, if you research the story, George Lucas has always been at the forefront of cutting edge technology and pushing boundaries. He is single-handedly the turning point for cinema. Green screen technology was created by George Lucas. He made it because he couldn't make Star Wars without it. So he had to figure out a way to get the effects that he wanted. And that's how green screen technology came. And you know, every movie uses green screen technology. So George Lucas single-handedly did that with Star Wars and his production company, ILM Industrial Light and Magic. So we have the prequel trilogy, we have the original trilogy, and the animated The Clone Wars series. And now we have this new Disney stuff with all these smattering of titles and directors and contributors. So many hands in the pot. The biggest difference between these two eras of Star Wars is that the George Lucas era of Star Wars was united by a single vision. That carried it. There was a single vision. He had a point behind what he was trying to do. He said in interviews, he's like, there's compassionate people and there's selfish people. There's the dark side and the light side. And if you want to be on the light side, if you want to be one of the good people, you've got to be compassionate. That's the whole point of his story. So obviously there's a lot of creative ways that he plays with it, but that's what he was going after. It's a family drama in space. It's a family space opera is what it is. That was his whole thing. It's a unifying vision. He had obviously final say because he owned the whole thing. Sure, he brought on like co-writers a few times and co-directors and, you know, but he was all directors reported back to him. All writers, everything went back to this single unifying vision in this new, and you can tell. So regardless of what you feel about the prequels and their execution and some of the performances, it still has that cohesiveness to it. This new Star Wars, oh my God, it's all over the place. Too many directors, too many writers, too many people hired and fired, and too many people. And it's, I don't even fully blame Lucasfilm or Kathleen. I think it's everything altogether. Lucasfilm is the birth child of George Lucas, and now Lucas is not a part. They don't even have him on as consultant. Kathleen Kennedy, while she is amazing at understanding how to maneuver Star Wars and running a business empire, she's not a storyteller. George Lucas is a storyteller. So there's certain things that she's going to miss, certain things she's not going to know to look out for, certain intuitions that she's not privy to because she's not a storyteller. I love Kathleen Kennedy. She was George Lucas's right-hand woman for years. So this is not even a diss, but this, she's not a storyteller. And it shows. And then, of course, Disney, the great machine. the people who run Disney aren't storytellers either. And it shows. It shows in everything they do, from their movies to how their shows work. Like, everything is a caricature. It's a business model. It's an assembly line. Disney has become an assembly line for pre-manufactured experiences. Every so often, you'll get something like, oh, that was really good. Oh, that, like, touched my heart. But that's who Disney is. And so it kind of shows in Marvel. Not a lot, but it kind of shows in Marvel. If you know what to look for, you see it in Marvel. And it shows in this new era of Star Wars. And so there's no unifying vision. And it's not being ran by storytellers. And George Lucas, the execution wasn't always how it needed to be, but he was an immaculate storyteller. So do I disregard Star Wars now? Do I hate Star Wars? No, I love Star Wars, but it's the conflict. It's the battle between the art and the artist. Do I say Disney makes terrible things? I can't say that. Do I say that all Star Wars products will now be bad? I can't say that. So how do we handle the battle between the art and the artist? Eminem's another one. He said abrasive things his whole career. At this point, it's kind of hilarious because we will acknowledge him as, I feel like, the greatest rapper who's ever lived, just from the sheer point maybe not greatest rapper, the greatest lyricist who's ever lived, because the stuff he can do with words, the stuff he does with words, no one else is doing, no one else has done. He's the one person you don't go against in the industry because he'll end your career in like a verse, but because he's Eminem, he'll do like six verses. So, but at the same time, like, we know that he raps about things that we don't endorse. He raps about things that he doesn't even endorse, but he does it because that's his whole thing. But at this point in time, we accept it. There is no boycotting Eminem or whatever. So do we accept it because we know he's not doing it or doing it anymore? Well, I mean, he beat Kim. But we know he's not like raping people and killing people and all these other things that he alludes to in his songs just for the sake of being clever with his lyrics. So do we accept it because he's not doing it, even though it's abrasive? Like, is that cool? Or will we prefer him to create content that is very much wholesome and uplifting and actually be doing those things behind the scenes? Like, why does Eminem kind of get the pass? And then even when he did his shot at Donald Trump, which was, you know, amazing, I love watching him because I could see the point where he departed from the verse he was gonna do, and he just went into this whole thing where he just went in on Trump. And it was amazing, and it was beautiful, and it was dope. I am a huge Eminem fan, so none of this is a diss or a shot at him, but I feel like it points to this thing that we're dealing with, the art versus the artist. The art that Eminem produces is excellent and crude and something you can't play around your mom, but at the same time, you gotta listen to it because you know he's weaving stuff in there, but at the same time, a lot of the stuff that he's weaving, we don't endorse. So what do you do with that? What do you do with that? And the last one I'll put in here is Infinity War. There's so much behind Infinity War. First of all, Thanos is not even a real villain. Let's say that. He's an anti-hero with supervillain tendencies. Fight me. Find me on Twitter. We can talk about it at Josh Evans Go. But he's not a real villain. Like, at the end of the day, Thanos genuinely wanted to make the galaxy a better place. That was his whole prerogative and motivation. That's not a villain. Sure, so he was willing to do supervillain stuff. So he had like an evil bent to him where he's willing to commit like these atrocities. But in his heart of hearts, he's not a villain. He's an anti-hero. Loki would be more of a villain than Thanos because Loki had no noble intentions for anything or anybody but himself. Like, he was willing to kill his brother. He was willing to kill his whole family just to rule Asgard. There's nothing noble about any of Loki's intentions. So anyways, but Infinity War, this great, what some people are calling a masterpiece of art, and this conflagration of 10 years of storytelling and movies and character development and introduction to a public who, for the most part, doesn't really know these characters very well, if you're not like a deep nerd, and who has not seen these characters outside of comic book pages or together on screen. And so you have Infinity War. So it hits, it breaks all these, you know, records, understandably so, because everybody was going to see it. But I doubt its staying power. And the primary reason that I doubt its staying power is because Infinity War, and actually I'll draw a loose parallel from Infinity War to The Force Awakens. Both of those films were extremely formulaic. Both of those films were extremely formulaic, and both of those films were done with a desired emotional response in mind. So I'm not saying that the story wasn't good. I'm not saying that the execution wasn't good. But there is a certain amount of, I felt like, organic moments, a certain amount of organic nuance. Yeah. There's some organic nuance that The Force Awakens missed, that Infinity War missed, because they were trying to manufacture this feeling at the end of it. Not in like a subtle way. It's okay as an artist to be like, you know, at the end of this, I would like people to feel sad. But then there's ways that you do that. But they like clubbed us over the head with what they wanted us to feel, how they wanted us to react. The problem is, everybody's reacted that way. So once everyone has the reaction, they see it once, twice, maybe three times. But after that, it's like, okay, there's nothing here. There's nothing left. And I feel like the art or the goodness behind really, really good art is that you can keep coming back to it and finding something new, something that, oh, I didn't see that before, or, oh, I like that, and, oh, I forgot that I had seen this, but The Force Awakens, Infinity War, it was too perfectly constructed. There wasn't a lot of wiggle room, and so I applaud it for, you know, bringing all these characters together, all these stories together, but did it really live up to the hype, and not even the hype of the people? Did it live up to the hype of its legacy? Did it live up to the hype of what it was supposed to be? And as fans of superheroes and comic books, and fans of Marvel and Stan Lee and Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby, as fans of all this stuff, what do we do, right? Do we abandon, like, oh, okay, like, it was a good movie, saw it a couple times, don't need to see it anymore? Do we abandon the whole ship? Are we concerned for the next phase? Do we write the Russo brothers off as like hack writers? We can't do that. Like, we can't do that. There's all these like extreme responses that we cannot do. The art versus the artist. Who wins? in these scenarios. The fact that the movie did not follow the comic, which is fine, but did it capture? It didn't capture really the sensibilities of the comic either. So what do you do? What do we do? I heard the other day from this pastor. He said something that I felt was profound. And actually, well, I was at a Bible study where a pastor was speaking, and a friend of mine who's friends with pastor said this. Anyways, so all this comes down to what I feel is this. Artists, no matter what forum, are emotional creatures. And so this thing goes into what the guy said. The guy said, we become what we do not forgive. We become what we do not forgive. So let's start tying all these threads back together. So whether you're making music, whether you're making TV shows, whether you're making a music video, whether you're making films, whatever your artistic expression is, all artists are emotional and we become what we don't forgive. So on the one hand, a lot of art comes out of angst and pain and ache, and it becomes this beautiful thing. And while we're celebrating the beauty, is the artist healing? What happens when this artist who has expressed themselves beautifully but has not healed themselves wholesomely is thrust into the spotlight of our needy expectations, where we put the weight and mantle on them to be who we're supposed to be? They break, they crumble, or they just keep creating more painful art. And it's the saddest thing when we have these artists who get older and we're not interested in their music because their music hasn't grown with them. Their creations haven't grown with them. Their films haven't grown with them. And we become what we do not forgive, what we do not let go. And I feel like that applies creatively as well. If we have settled in on this is how stories are told for this era, this is how you put together these types of films, this is how you do this thing, we become what we're not releasing, right? Because forgiveness is release. We become what we do not release. And if Disney, if Star Wars, if Marvel, granted, that's hilarious because those are all the same entity basically at this point. If they do not release this is how we do it, they will miss out on what they, the potential of what they could become. And so they will end up doing on a greater scale what they've already begun to do on a minor scale, which is just going in endless circles, because that's what unforgiveness does. So now we're getting into the resolve, kind of away from the art and into the artist. There is a French psychoanalyst named Jacques Lacan, and this is his quote. What one must bear in mind is that bliss is forbidden to the speaker as such, or else that it cannot be spoken except between the lines. I'll read it again. What one must bear in mind is that bliss is forbidden to the speaker as such, or else that it cannot be spoken except between the lines. The thing that we are looking for in our art, in our artists, even in the films, in the music, in the television, in the dance, in the painting, in the poetry, in all of it. What we are looking for is this element of bliss, this transcendent peace. And using the most recent example of Infinity War and The Force Awakens, they gave us pleasure. They beat us over the head with pleasure. We watched it. We felt things. It was done. But the nuance of bliss, they missed because they tried to express it. Bliss is one of those things. It's if you have a significant other, and you guys are having like a tender talk, and it's that moment in the conversation where you guys are just looking at each other and it's googly eyes. And you can say, I love you. Or you can just sit in the moment and I love you plus a million other things are communicated. And that moment has so much more depth to it now, so much more weight to it. Because you didn't attempt to convert the bliss into words. You didn't attempt to cash in on the pleasure. You allowed the pleasure. The pleasure exists because you're there, because you're present. And now you have this bliss thing taking it over the top. This is what we need from art. this is what we need from artists. And because what Bliss does, it's kind of like being in the pocket as far as like music or rapping or like, you know, just letting something simmer a moment. Bliss allows us to be more in tune with our own selves, which places us in the internal position of making wiser decisions and assessments about people. And so we're able to handle the art that people create and the identity that they create alongside their art, because that's what artists do. They're working out their identity just like anyone else. They just happen to be making magic elements while they do it. So this is dual to the people, and this is dual to people as well as artists. Find the bliss. Find the bliss. This is how you make good, transcendent art. Put the bliss in it. And as far as being an artist, Lin-Manuel Miranda, excuse me, the creator and star of the Broadway hit Hamilton, the winner of 11 Tony Awards and so many other awards, it would take a whole other podcast to run through them. He said this. He had an interview with Oprah in Super Soul Conversations, and she's asking him, you know, how do you raise kids in this environment, and especially for you now, where, you know, they have advantages and they can do all these different things. Like, what do you do? And so he tells her that empathy is the greatest thing you can give your kids. And then he elaborates and says something fascinating. He says, empathy is the number one tool in your toolbox as an artist. You can't do anything if you can't imagine yourself in someone else's shoes. That's the whole gig. That's it. Empathy is the whole gig as an artist. So we're coming back to now the personal responsibility of the artist as you're creating, as you're expressing, as you're emoting, as you're thinking, as you're processing. Compassion, empathy, which is the other side of compassion, empathy is the greatest tool in your toolbox. It's the whole gig. So keep your audience in mind. As much as you keep your audience in mind when you're creating, keep them in mind about how you conduct yourself, who you are as a person. So you're not becoming who you are for them, but become who you are for you with them in mind. Empathy is the whole thing. If the artist is being empathetic and the fans are being empathetic, the whole dynamic of the world and creativity begins to change drastically, and it's exactly what we need. So, in this massive war between the art and the artist, who comes out on top? The people. Happy trails, friends. Ask better questions, do interesting things, live your best story possible. I'll see you next time. Thank you guys for tuning in. And once again, this is your host, Joshua Evans. Make sure you click subscribe so that you don't miss any of our future episodes. And if you want to know where I'm going to be, what I'm thinking, what I'm talking about, where I'm going to be performing next, or you just want to have a good old-fashioned conversation about interesting things, go ahead and hit me up on Twitter. That's at Josh Evans Go. That's where all the magic happens. And I will see you guys next time. Happy listening.